Welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast, a Jaybird.
Hey, Steve, how's it going?
I'm awful mad at you.
Oh. It's one day. Come on.
2 days.
You can't count Friday. I mean, it was a Muskie Shop jamboree of excitement with that big
Friday
sale. It's still going on, man. That clothing sale we got going on. Unbelievable.
For the first time in like 3 years, Jay was busy, folks. Believe it or not,
I was busy outside of work, you mean? Yeah.
Time ever, Jay had something else.
I did get out fishing in the morning, but yeah, the rest of the day was...
He's like a robot that plugs in at home. I will go to Muskie Shop.
So wiped out. I'm like, dude, can we do this Sunday?
It's usually me going...
Are you serious?
It's almost always you.
It's like, no, hey,
it always has been. Like, I'm so
it's
tired.
It's like 11 p.m. and you're like, I'm just getting off the water. I'm driving home now. Are you still up? You know, it's like, oh, man, you kidding me? That's past my bedtime, Steve.
Well, you've been a busy beaver. Gnawing at things. Gnawing little beaver.
Well, we're getting it done now, so that's all that counts.
No way, sweet beaver. No way.
Think about now.
Right now. Right now, it's time to talk about who won the possum hunt, baby.
Yeah, the possum hunt. Yes.
Yes.
You don't know this, but I'm looking at how many pages here we get?
So many.
Two pages or something like that of entries? Yeah.
I don't know what we said last week because I had a lot of Pepsis.
I can't remember myself.
We might have said the first. Not sure. But we had so many people on the great possum hunt there. So I think Jay will have to explain how he's picking the winner. So I had a lot of people emailing the app, a lot of people emailing everywhere. You had to do it through the shop, right? You had to do this. You're going to win the crazy ultimate Muskie Extreme prize pack, whatever it is, right?
Yep. Yep, I've got it at work in the office, ready to go. All we need
is a wiener.
It is the shipping information for a Mr. Kyle Frolich.
Dang.
Yeah. Kyle, great job. You were the first one that nailed it.
Nailed that.
And judging from the timestamp on the email, Kyle stayed up a while that evening. Good job, buddy. I'm impressed.
Good job or bad job. It's all everything in life is contextual, Jay. You go.
Yeah.
This guy was up till 6 in the morning looking for a possum on some musky fishing website. Right. You go.
Well, and everybody else that sent in correct winning emails, a million kind comments. We appreciate them all. They're all listeners, obviously. And sorry we couldn't give out a prize to everybody.
Well, maybe we can. Maybe we can do another prize pack this week. Maybe.
Hey,
think about it for
maybe.
A minute. We'll give her 5 minutes. But
okay.
So that was cool. And it's just like you think about it. I'm sort of ragging him, Jay, the guy that won, right? He stayed up all night. Me and you went, where do we hide this possum? For like an hour.
We're going, where am I going to put this
thing? Total morons. Yeah. We're like, where do you put that possum at on them internets?
I said, there's an Eagle Lake map in here, Steve. You're like, bingo. And that's perfect.
I was just out there with that Steve Herbeck, and we were able to, it's so cryptic.
Herbie. Yeah, Herbie. It makes sense, you know.
Anyway, maybe. Give us. We got 4.5 minutes here to think about what we're doing this week. Big excitement. So I've been slammed, but Josh, the makes the blade, right?
Yeah.
Worked with Josh on the blade. He's my dude. You saw the video on the freaking Supernatural baits. You guys know what I think of this planer board. You saw what it can do, right? Me and Josh worked on this thing for ages. Josh is the man. He's got a batch coming.
Yes, good.
So it's the same old crap, getting parts, getting supplies. We're working on it, but they're coming shortly, so stay tuned on that. And I'm just letting you know, if you're not signed up on those, sign up, because there are more people signed up than are coming, than are going to be made. So
yeah, let's put it that way. Yeah, first wave will go out immediately. So they are amazing.
That's the problem with muskie fishing, is like the market's so small, but you do like there's enough. You can't ever make enough, but if you make too much, you need it. Blah 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 blah. So we're getting really geared into that fall trolling, that big trolling bite coming up. So that's the reason I mentioned that. The other thing, is the sale going on still a little bit? 10/20 summer sale.
The 10/20 sale. It is still going on. I don't know what the termination, I'm completely honest, I don't know when the termination date is,
well,
or if there will be one.
Well, it says right now, $10 hats, $10 tees. So
$20 hoodies. I mean, and there's a lot of good stuff too, current stuff. It's just that Jim's got such a huge clothing department of monkey shop
much.
Apparel.
It's like, I mean, is bad. Jay,
yeah,
like,
there's
yeah,
more.
It's like,
yeah, those, there. That's exactly right. Overstock.
Right. There's bad furniture commercials. Broyhill, we bought too much. Lazy Boy.
You know something about the furniture stores all in the Northwoods that you
they
probably
all
don't
sell
know?
Guns as
they
well.
All, how'd you know that?
Because you've told me. It's like, come yeah. on down to Larry's Loungers and Guns. We got Glocks and Lazy Boys.
Lazy Boys and firearms.
Right.
It's the truth, and it's comical.
Browning, Smith & Wesson. You know, it's like,
my sister's husband was up earlier this summer, and he saw that commercial, and I watched his expression. He did a double take. He goes, was that a furniture store that sells AK-47s? I said,
yes, it was.
Actually, it is. It's just in Tomahawk, a short drive from the Muskie Shop.
Right. In a town that's named after a weapon. Is the one place you would have. That's amazing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Now, the other thing that got me. Now, of course, Jay's brother-in-law is a librarian. I understand he's avrapos, taken aback.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Me as a full-fledged redneck, I'm totally into this. So we got furniture and guns. Badass, right? Yee-yee, stamp of approval. Isn't there also gas and guns, which is like... Isn't there a gas station with guns too, which is awesome?
With every extra, you know, if you buy a Glock, you get a free tank fill up. I don't know.
I somebody was telling me there's like just a place where it's like a gas station and gun store, which is sort of hilarious.
I'm not sure.
Guns and bagels.
wouldn't doubt it. Anything north of Wausau. I mean, that's kind of the zone for that to potentially happen.
How can you go wrong? My two passions, right? Pet hamsters and machine guns. So, and you can buy them. Furniture, yeah. Firearms, gas, guns, right? Hand grenades and hamsters. I like guns. They're fun. Got plenty of them. Why would you not want to buy? Imagine this sale, Jay.
The 10/20 sale?
No, you could buy like a wraparound like furniture set, right? And they're like, listen, guy's selling you, right? Mr. Essie, I know you and your wife are looking for this furniture, but if you buy this wraparound sofa, family size, it's got a recliner on either end, there's cup holders, right? I'm going to throw in a Mossberg. How do you not take that sale?
That's the thing around here. You know, it's just like just the other day, doe tags went on sale. Just seeing the people coming in for that. So a lot of times you'll be like, hey, listen, this is a reclining bucket Lazy Boy.
Uh-huh.
The problem is I know you got your doe tag because I can see the smile on your face.
Kick your feet up.
Can I interest you in a Remington Model 70 with a 3-9 in aught 6?
Listen, this store... me and Jay will come and shoot any commercial for you in the most positive for free. It's amazing.
It's a Wisconsin thing. It's a Wisconsin thing.
Guns, furniture, and donuts. if you throw a food item in there,
Elmer's going to be the spokesman now. We're out of the picture now.
Right. We got freaking donut holes and combat boots. I don't know.
We're off target, baby.
We're off the target, but it's sort of like every gas station out there. You walk in the place, it's a freaking Kroger, you know?
It's cool.
Well, you know, when there's seven people. They got this 10/20 sale going on here. And there's a lot of stuff. It's clearing out summer apparel. There's not much of it that's left, to be honest with you. Get this or get that. If you're big, you're tall, you're short, you're tiny. A lot of those odd sizes, a lot of that stuff. I'll tell you, I wear it all the time. There's literally the black t-shirt. How? Come on, dude. $10.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one I wear all the time. Jay, I have a musky confessions. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Musky confession.
This week's musky confession.
Have a secret.
Steve. I pretty much have not worn anything that didn't say musky on it in years.
I was talking about that the other day. Yeah.
I don't have apparel that's not musky related other than pants.
I really don't either. It's kind of embarrassing right. at times.
I know. I had a business meeting I had to go to. I was like, what musky shop shirt says business?
I got one for you. I just thought of this. I went out the other night and I said I thought I was dressing up a little bit mm-hmm. because I didn't wear a musky shop thing. And right. you know what I ended up putting on?
What?
A Red October t-shirt.
really stepping up.
Oh my God. Yeah. Boy. Night out in the town, baby.
Hold on. I've saved this.
Jay's undercover, man. He's incognito.
Save this kick-ass t-shirt for a special occasion.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's what happens when you musky fish too much, that every shirt you have and every hoodie you have. Like, I have one hoodie that says Mouse Rat on it, which is from Parks and Rec, a TV show. Other than that, everything's musky shop. But now that's a really cool shirt, and then you've got all your hats. And let's see. One thing I'll say, if you want to go throwback, right? If you want to be Joe Booker himself.
What?
Right? Prepare yeah. yourself, Jay.
Okay.
You ready?
The
year is 1999.
Ooh.
You're on Lake of the Woods.
Mm.
You just applied hair gel.
Ooh.
You need the Musky Shop visor. So we've got That was the thing. Remember all these dudes? Like, all of them were wearing. I love Joe. Like, there was an era there was like everybody's rocking visors and hair gel.
They really are comfortable though.
It was sort of cool. Well, they're cooler. But yeah. Joe went through a visor phase. Who doesn't?
Maximum airflow.
Anyway, we're just being stupid. That's a cool Suffolk shirt. I like this. I wear this one. The Musky Shop red, white, and blue patch cap. That's cool. Mm-hmm.
Ooh. I got one of those, yeah.
What's what I'm looking here? Hodgman Core Pant Liners.
Yeah, there's a few left. I put those on there Friday. They're insulated.
What?
And you just throw your bibs over there. It's like you throw your rain pants on over those, your rain bibs.
You
could fish in the dead of winter with those things. There's okay. the insulation in them. I got one of those, too.
Do you have a pair of
They're
them?
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Got the whole suit.
What size do you wear?
XL.
For $20. I'm
$20.
I'm literally on 2XL, large.
Be great for deer hunting too. Anything else? Anything cold weather. What?
I'm being serious, dude. As we go here, I was like, "Those are badass. I need them." And they're sold out.
So, no.
Oh my God. This is funny because I'm stupid. Okay, you might want to take those off the sale here when you get your laptop out. Because I was actually stoked about it. I was like, $20. Anyway, I'll shut up, Jay. I don't know. We just have fun with this stuff. Anyway, Jay, for the first time in 25 years, is busy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's out there doing things. Jay, you're living mm-hmm. a big life.
Yeah.
Right? Just out there running around. I've heard things. You're out there mm-hmm. fishing.
Yep.
Kicking ass and taking names. What are you gonna do? Anyway, on to the Q&A. Matt! So I recently got a new fishing boat, Tracker V16, that I upgraded from a Grizzly 65 or 1654. You know, I got it on the bigger water with less pucker moments. Anyway, I've tried fishing Green Bay for muskies once so far, but couldn't find any real weed beds for fish. I plan on going again the next couple weeks. Any suggestion? I'm also going to go up to my girlfriend's cottage over Labor Day, and I'll be stopping at the shop on my way. Well, have a good time. As for Jay, Joe, hook you up. Matt, as far as recommendations on that, I mean, time frame's gonna matter. You know, if you get on the big water, I'll tell you unpopular opinion on that, but when you get into like some of these big popular waters, right? Sometimes you need to be observant of what's going on. Where's the consolidation of anglers, right? If that's not the case, then you definitely need to be dialed in with your electronics. You need to be really looking at your graphic on what's going on here. Is there weed? Is there bait? Is there forage? You know, what am I looking at? Because when you're dealing with giant bodies of water, Jay, as you know, you can be miles from good stuff. Right. So you got to be observant of your electronics. You know, there's a lot of great resources on a body of water like Green Bay, though, too. Right. Particular things. Who at the shop you think would probably have the best info on that? Big Ticket?
Yeah, I mean, some of the guys occasionally take trips over there. You know, it's a ways from us.
Captain Tim?
Tim's in the loop pretty good. That might be a good call.
Call the Muskie shop. Yeah. That's for Captain Tim.
Yep, Tim Ives.
Tim Alive. Tim could cue you in a little bit, right? He likes fishing the big water. He the deeper, the more treacherous, the better. If Tim Ives was on a boat 400 miles offshore, he'd be a happy man. But, you know, again, everything applies the basics of finding out what's going on with muskie supply. Forage, weather, bait, presentation. You know all this stuff. But give that call, because I don't want to sort of lead you down the wrong path in any direction. But call the shop, say, is Tim there? When's he going to be there? He'll cue you in a little bit. Brian, fellas, here's the map of a lake I referred to in a question I've submitted. It's a lake in blah, 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 blah. Right? I'm going to skip that. I tried using the info I've picked up in your Structure Masterclass episode, which was sick, by the way, to hone in on suspect spots. I circled the spots that I felt that looked good and really hoping I interpreted this right. But the depths adjacent to the structure I circled seem so deep, it's got me questioning my approach. Are the big girls in the shallow end of the pool? What's going on? So,
did he send you a screenshot of what he's referring to?
I got it right here.
Okay. Okay.
Pull it up. Okay. So, in reality here, guys, I'm not going to say where he's looking at, but it is a very deep, clear, heavily pressure body of water, right? So for all you guys that are going, well, I know you guys are leaving us out in the lurch here, not saying the name of the lake. Yeah, we're not going to spot burn, but that's the deal. So what you've marked on your map, Brian, looks really good, right? What you have is shallow structure. So you have structure, break lines adjacent to deeper water. That's where I'm going to be targeting my big fish, right? You also have some very shallow areas that are coming up in the 10 zone. There's some, like, even some no wakey stuff. You need to be checking those too. So if these spots, which look good structurally on the map, I'm going, that looks good, what you've looked at, right? Combination of both. But what he's marked on the map, Jay, I'll show you later, looks money. So your map work looks good. Now, the question has always been this. We're going to do this at home, and we're going to remember we talked about this previously on a podcast. We're going to mark this stuff, right? And we're going to grade it. So these are your A's. Everything you mark to me is an A. That is an A plus. That is the top score. Everything looks great. Now, if we look at there's a point you've marked here, and it says dwelling on one side and dwelling. There's another little area to the left of that might be suspect. But anyway, everything you mark looks great. What's important is we need to look at the B spots now. And we need to make a milk run based on A and B spots and maybe some C stuff, right? Integrate some other elements into that, right? Make sure we're targeting that deeper vegetation when you got it. You've got some, looks like here to the east, a lot of shallow flats. So I'm going to work all of this, and we're going to see some stuff that breaks from 10 to 15 to 20, and then it falls off the cliff to 30. Some of these flats can be really important, right? So mix it up. So you've got, in my mind, my attack plan. I'm seeing one spot that I would have marked as a primo spot that you didn't on this map, right? Now, if I'm coming here, there's a big point. There's a big point you've marked here. I'm gonna check the other point as well. That's it. Aside from that, you covered what we've talked about previously over the years. Now we need to look at some of the structural breaks in some of these flat zones so we can sort of pick it apart. So we go, well, they're off the deep stuff, off the shallow stuff, right? So mark your shallow stuff and sort of attack it that way. And now you just do the mix. And Joe, we've talked that before, about that before. We go, okay, here's my best laid plan. Here's my A game, right? Have a B game together and have a C game. Based on weather, water, whatever it might be, you've got a plan of attack across the board. Jay, what do you think of the map?
The map sounds delicious. Okay.
I can't see it. Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, not knowing anything about it, and it sounds like it's his first time going out there completely new and fresh, that is it just loaded with good-looking spots? Are you guys picking out after
he dug deep.
Okay,
like
okay.
Between the video and all that stuff, the structural stuff's right. It's very cool. I'll tell you the lake later, and you'll go, oh.
Okay. Yeah, but you said A, B, and C, and I agree. It's just like we're coming into that transition zone of the year. I mean, September for us up here. I mean, yeah. it's like, forget about it. Everyone lives for that time of the year when you start to get slight drops in the water temperature, and fish, you usually start turning on at some point. Like, when those windows, those intense windows kick in, it's just like topwater bite, bucktail bite, shallow stuff, fun times. Looking forward to it. Yeah, that's the thing. You know, what'd you say? He was coming by Labor Day?
Yeah.
Heading up there Labor Day? Perfect. Yeah. Just at the onset of that deal. So it's a time of great mystery. It's like you got to watch the elements, what's going on with the weather trends and all that, and take it all into consideration.
Tom, I have a line counter real question. I calibrated my 80-pound Power Pro line on a Dakota reel. Once the reel is calibrated to 100 feet and you tie in your leader, it should be good to go, right? But what happens when you have to cut the line to retie? Do you have to recalibrate? Or if you went 20 feet out of line, is it still accurate? Thanks for asking this, and love the podcast. To be honest with you, line counter reels, I watched a walleye guy one time do this, right? I'm thinking, my brain went, and he was super freaked out about it, right? This walleye guy's like, it's a YouTube video. I saw years back, and he's like,
okay,
I'm going to put out two stakes, and they are perfectly measured at 116 feet or something arbitrary, right? It's like 112 or whatever. And he wanted to know that his line counter reel was like money on. Like perfect. Like it was like within inches.
Yeah, I get it. Right.
And maybe that matters when we're doing the smaller baits. I'm not so worried about it, because if like you calibrate the reel, and a lot of times what I'll do with this in the past is running that metered line, right?
Yeah.
And you don't see that very often. But I would run metered line, which is, if you guys don't know, metered line is, was it 5 or 10 foot sections, Jay? Usually 10, right?
Oh, I thought it was 5.
It
might
be 5. I mean,
there's not much on the market, really.
Not anymore. But there used to be line that was multi-collared in 5 foot increments. So it'd be yellow, blue, pink, right? Mm-hmm. You know, sassafras, green, I don't know, whatever. And it would be colored in different segments. That, you were like, okay, I would cut it off in 5 foot segments, right? If I need to retie, I kill 5 feet. I can't say I've been in a situation where with a headlock or a depth rater or a tough shad or something of that nature, that I felt that retying and not having that line counter within that kind of tight tolerance mattered. Everybody's in different situations. You could be on a lake where it matters, where 6 inches is the difference between catching fish or not, right? If that is the case, it's a tough day. So I wouldn't worry about it. However, there's something to be said, though, about, and the reason I'm sort of like, not, I'm sort of digging in this thought process is, as that spool diminishes, it will be off, right? What I've done to compensate for that is a lot of my line counter reels are full of a ton of backing, right? So I'll put on 120 feet or 150 feet and then reapply that periodically, right? So I'm not going to fill that whole spool full of braid. The chances, Jay, perfect example, that Northwoods headlock big fish, right?
Mm-hmm.
That pulled a ton of line.
Yeah.
About as much as I've seen. I think I told you that day we were talking about it.
Yeah, it was a hard 180. Yeah, it was crazy.
Silly. And I genuinely think he was headed one way and the bait was headed the other.
It was cool.
But, you know, he didn't get me down to the backing by any means. So maybe if you sort of have don't fill that whole spool up with expensive braided line, fill it up with a bunch of heavy duty backing and then have 150 feet, 200 feet.
Yeah,
and so once you retie a multitude of times, you're not losing as much braid, and you can reapply that braid and be back in the game. Because I get it. Once that thing's off by a foot or two, could be problematic. I'm crawling down the rabbit hole, Jay. Where are you at?
Yeah, I mean, I can see 2 feet for sure. But, you know, how many times we troll, and it's just like the line counters are saying 30.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of variables. We're trying to scratch the surface mm-hmm. on the ideal spots. I mean, you're the trolling expert. You know, it's just like, I mean, I learned a lot this year doing our trolling passes about mm-hmm. about the depths and how these things are running, and just even the difference between, because it's not like we were running all supernatural baits all the time.
Right.
We went on one body of water, and I think we spent some time trolling on that one dark lake, you know? Our you know Rachel's. What I'm talking about? And, yeah. Yeah.
Trolling Rachel's.
Rachel's. We had depth raiders going. We had smaller minnow mate type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like they all run different, and they all contact different. And if you're fishing over rock or weeds, you want them running at a specific depth. It's that just that simple. But you don't know how high the occasional thing comes up, and it's just like the cribs are always erratic, and they are always a challenge.
Jay, are you ready for it?
It's just like, I'm going to run this crib. We're just going to nick it. Right. And it's like, usually you can get there, but you got to get close to make the magic happen.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. This week's episode is a masterclass on getting baits caught in cribs.
How do you get them out effectively?
Oh, that was so bad. We had one, I think we went 40 feet one time and snagged four baits into cribs. We're like,
we got them all out, though.
Okay, on an aside, right? So, obviously, if you got one guy in the boat, it's really hard to troll a lot of lines. But let's say you got one or two. Something just to throw out there, because I don't lose that many baits. It's a rarity when we're trolling. Just back the boat up. Just saying that. What do? Don't sit there and work the thing. Just get the rod, get the other bait up so you don't back your motor into it. Back your boat up in the same direction you were going, right? Go past the snag and pull it out of the crib or tree or rocks or whatever you're in. Just a simple tip there, but go,
you go past it. Sometimes it'll float up on its own. It's just a matter of leverage.
And take the pressure off, because a lot of times it's the lip. So mm-hmm. we've mm-hmm. seen that a multitude of times, but which brings up another thing. So, and Tom, I really appreciate, I know we're going beyond and beyond what you'd ask, but accuracy matters in trolling, right? Speed and line, we know that. That's why I asked. Bait to bait, period. And there's variances in supernatural baits. There's variances in depth raiders. There's variances in Rachel's or Squeaky Pete's or Jake's or everything, right? I may have said it before, maybe not, whatever, it doesn't matter. The best way to get a really good feel for this, if you got to do one of those days where you go, I'm not musky fishing per se, just checking baits out, and take your baits and say, okay, I got this Livingston Lures Rachel, right? And I want to figure out how this thing runs and you go, this is the one I'm going to run. And you go, I'm going to run it into the ground at 15 feet at X amount of speed. Do it. Making contact where you know it's hitting the bottom, you know exactly go because it's 48 feet is hitting at X amount of feet, right, Jay? At this speed. Yeah. You make your own trolling chart. So you get the Muskie 360 app and you go, here's the trolling charts, the really basic numbers here. But bait to bait, there's slight variations. So if you're really wanting to get that accurate, which I have baits, you've seen them in the boat, Jay, where they are scribbled almost Sharpies that say 39 feet, 3.4, right? Or this distance in that. Those baits are trolling baits. I don't cast them. I don't do anything else, but I troll them. In that scenario, when I go, I need a bait that's running like this, at this speed, at that. So you get dialed in on that. So you can
That's a great tip for trolling. Have a black Sharpie in the boat. Write it on the back of the lure.
Mm-hmm.
Write your notes on it. You know, if you got half the tackle box you run for trolling baits, you're going to need to access that information quickly at your fingertips. You'll
never remember it.
And you won't.
And I'll jot it on stuff. I go, you know, I've got to know. It's literally, I see it on the wall right now next to some trolling baits. And that's my, I won't say what speed it is, but there's a certain speed. I have like six baits that are like, these run at money at that. Right?
Yeah.
Speed. We're looking at the same, when it comes to catching muskie, it's speed, depth, profile, all this stuff. So having that data, having that information is great. Now, how do you get that information? You got to go and put in the work where you go. And I, again, we're so down the rabbit hole on this. I've talked to my buddy Ben that makes Spitfire about this so many times, and he's a kook. Ben's nuts. But he's the other guy that will do what I will do, which is like take a bait, right? And go somewhere where there's no muskies, so there's no pressure, right? Sometimes that's important. If you go and spend 6 hours on your gear and go, okay, my trolling setups are doing this. This is what these do. You're learning the gear. It sounds so stupid.
Are you saying that relieves the guilt factor if you go to a lake with no muskies on it when you're doing homework?
Right.
probably true.
You don't have the pressure to catch a fish.
Yeah.
You know, I can't go out on a trip with, like, say you, or we're doing this, we're doing that, we got to put a fish in the boat.
Yeah.
I've got to go out and go, okay, I've got 10 Jakes. How are they different? How are they the same? Which one looks better? Which one doesn't? Right? How do they run? I've got to run 10 different Jakes. Right? Or three Squeaky Petes, and I got to figure out if these baits are what I want. I got to run them. Looks good. Looks good at the rod tip. Okay. Well, let's say my other 10-inch Jake, right? I've got a black, what is it, Night Shiner or whatever the heck it is, Jake, that's just always been good to me. Well, let's say I get another one. I've got to test it against the other one. Go, okay, if I'm going 3.6 with 45 feet of line, he hits the bottom at 6 feet or something stupid, right? I'm making stuff up. Well, if the other one doesn't do that, they're different. Make the same pass, test them in a real-world application because it becomes a non-arbitrary thing. And you go, this bait is slightly different because the guy that assembled that day was upset and the lip's off by 2 microns. You know what I'm saying?
Well, for sure, it doesn't take much to make that thing run differently.
Just slightly different. Observe. You know, we always say make an assessment. Assess what each bait will do. Once you've obtained that data, you've logged that data, now you have a much more formulaic trolling game plan, right? So this started with line length, Jay. And I blame you. I'm sorry. Rabbit hole.
Oh, tangent. Yeah. Rabbit hole.
That's your new bait. JSE presents the Rabbit Hole.
Rabbit Hole Tackle proudly presents the newest
jackalope. Best. JSE's jackalope from Rabbit Hole.
It's a showstopper, baby.
Stuff your hole with Rabbit Hole.
Yes.
Yes. Man, sorry.
It's okay.
Stupid. Brian! I'm getting ready to fish a new lake that is known to have a good muskie population. I'm done some map study and spot. Okay, we just answered this. He sent two questions. Thank you, Brian. Jack, what type of fly line and leader do you use? Also, do you tie straight on or use some sort of snap? Okay. So, you've heard me say it before. I like flies for muskies. It's pretty productive. It has its time and place, right? I am not a fly fishing aficionado. I like fly fishing for muskies when things suck and you got to produce. So my setup is a 10 weight and I'm using a bigger Arbor. I think it's like a 12 Arbor because I'm stupid. It's like sort of like that's the wrong setup. Like you got your reel's too big for your rod or something, Jay, but who cares? But I'm using 10 weight fly line. Rio is what I have. It's like Rio Predator. And it's got a loop in. So the way that I put my leaders on and what I do for my leaders is about an 18-inch piece of fluorocarbon that I'm crimping onto my loop in. And on the other end, I have a split ring. So it's like the no BS fly leader. So I've been on the boat, got a lot of fly trips over the years. And you have guys that come out and they have a setup and it tapers, right? We've gone from 2 pound fluorocarbon to 60 pound fluorocarbon to titanium, or you know what I'm saying? Like,
I bet.
Now we have multiple points with it can get stressed. We've got a lot of joinery. We've got a lot of stuff going on. If they will come up and smack 80 pound braided line, that's in, you know what I'm saying? Like, here's 80 pound braid in front of a bait with 2 7-aughts, an 18 or 24 inch fly leader that's fluoro in front of your floating or sinking line's not going to make a hill of beans.
Yeah, when it boils down to
right.
it, we've all decided long ago that muskies are not that line shy.
Right.
It's not
if
in
they,
there.
Yeah, if we were, yeah. if they were, we'd be like, Jay, I'm using 20 pound Strin low vis. Right. You got to play them light, boys.
Yeah. I'll land one out of the 10.
Right. Right. I haven't set the hook on one in 2 years, but man, I'm getting hit.
Yeah.
Losing a lot of baits. I mean, it would be a bad scenario if they're a line show.
It would be. Yeah. Would
but
be.
I'm using, again, it's unconventional. That's the way I like to do it. It's been effective for me. Is a pretty short. I've used hard mono too in the past, but fluoro, whatever you got your hands on, hard mono, fluoro. And I do the split ring. It's an essentially a Joe Booker no BS leader that I crimp onto my loop in of my fly line. Now, one thing I'll sort of give you the tip of the day is because I'm not that focused. I'm not solely focused on musky fly fishing in any regard. So if I need a sinking presentation, I will increase my leader length for the day. Now I have complete control. So I have a floating line that's obviously, when it has weight applied to it, has an extremely slow sink if it's getting pulled down. If I need to get a sinking fly down 7 feet and that's sort of my target zone, I might make myself a 7 foot leader. So you really have a lot of control at that point. I could extrapolate more, but I'll leave it at that. That's just a concept that I've used. Okay, I need to get to weed tops or 3 feet down in general. How about I do a 3 foot piece of leader material with a sinking fly and a floating line? Now I sort of have a little bit more control. And that's worked for me. Whatever. The way I fish for muskies on the fly is slightly unconventional. Oh well. That's been helpful. Now in the figure eight scenario, which I'll tell you the flat out, I'm not the best at a figure eight with a fly. But that shorter leader has been very helpful.
That sounds really interesting. I've never done it.
What?
I'm just visualizing figure eighting with a fly.
It's a little goofy.
A little awkward. It's got to be. Yeah. Fly fishing's that art form kind of thing. I just have never done it. Not well, for muskies.
For me, it's fun. Negative and neutral fish. It works.
You got some nice ones last year.
I did. I've caught some nice ones this year doing it. And I got about four tricks, and if they don't work, then I'm in trouble. There's another Jack, a different Jack. Two Jacks. Can you believe there are two people named Jack in the world? Insane.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one Steve. I'm from Maine, and the lake I fish was formed by a glacier and has created a huge hole in the river. It breaks almost a 90-degree angle to 100 feet of water. How would you attack this situation when trolling?
Ooh. 90-degree angle. This is a river in Maine, and it's got a 100-foot hole?
Giant holes. Sorry, Jay, I had to hit the urination station. Okay. Came out of nowhere. Jay,
mm-hmm.
Help this guy with his giant hole.
Well, it sounds bizarre. That is incredible depth in a river. Mm-hmm. It's what's with the Northeast and the deep rivers? Glaciers. That's crazy. You got that stuff down there too. We just do not in Wisconsin. Okay.
4 billion people here is 20 years foot, ago.
So yeah. Sounds cool. I bet it's pretty clear water too. That is ripe for trolling.
Right. Well, that's helpful.
Well, bend in the river with deep water access. I mean, find your depth and find your structure.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, so let's look.
Here. I mean, what do you think?
Okay, the lake was formed by glaciers and has created a huge hole in a river. Is a muskie... I can't attest for what a muskie in Maine is going to do in general, right? But muskies in general are relatively the same across the habitat range. So I would say that I would be comfortable in eliminating anything sub 40 feet, right? Now, there's a lot of conservation questions that come up beyond that, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, I've never burped a fish, or I can't remember. Maybe I have, but it's so rare where I've heard about fish coming from really deep depths and all this stuff. So, but if I've got that sharp of a break, that's like a freaking skyscraper, right? It breaks at a 90-degree angle. It's like, boom, right? That's going to be the wall of doom in my head, right? So muskies are going to move up vertically, very near that, and so is bait. So my game plan would be trolling right against that vertical break. If I'm heading up this thing, I want a lure that's banging off of it if I can. If it's that sharp and it's that acute of an angle, I want a bait that is just dangerously touching that wall, right? Bang, 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 bang. Getting in there, getting out of there. The boat's swerving, so that bait's banging off that wall. I think the muskies in that area would be moving vertically. Now, there could be some suspended fish off that wall looking for bait fish that are moving vertically. But that's going to be my first consideration, is really making contact with that at different depths. So, let's say I'm headed north up this wall conceptually, which puts it on my left hand side in some regard, right, Jay?
Mm-hmm.
In my yep. brain, okay, I'm squared up. My left hand side is off this big break that's vertical. You know, I'm going to focus on two presentations as close to that as I can get it, and then I'll have another presentation right in the wash, and then maybe one further out. I'll work that one or two times up and back, and then maybe the next time I'll get off of a little bit more, and I'll work my way away from it, right? Now, what's interesting, and I'm scribbling on my desk with a freaking mechanical pencil here trying to keep my thoughts straight about how to contend with this, is if you have that kind of dominant structure that's that intense, it's like I'm drawing an upside-down L, a big number 7 here. I'm retarded. An upside down LJ, which is a 7. Jeez. That's my big vertical break. Folks, I'm not smart. Anywho, not a German 7, just a normal 7. But I've made this image in my head of what this looks like, where it's an exploration of depth at that point. like we talk about, I don't think 40 feet is going to be the ticket. They're somewhere associated to that hard break. Right? So obviously we got to contend with, how do we break that down? How we do the depth? Like I said, I would be tight to that at multiple depths, multiple passes before I work away from it. Because if I was a muskie, I would lie in wait against that, waiting for something to be dumb enough to swim vertically past me. That would be the tip.
Okay.
I don't know. What do you think, Jay?
You're saying first pass, run tight?
Run tight. And make contact. And you work away. Stagger the,
Let's say you got three lines out, stagger the baits. Maybe one's running 14, one's running 17, and one's running at 20.
Right. We got a cloudy day. We've got overcast, nasty, musky conditions. It needs to be 2, 4, 5 multiple passes. And we need to be looking at, when's our windows? When's our majors? Where's our minors? Unless this thing's fluctuating a lot like a reservoir.
Right.
So we
need one pass is not sufficient.
Sufficient. And I have just this abyss in my brain. You know, those are crazy depths. Boom. And just this monstrous cliff that water just falls over. But break it down, multiple passes, multiple sizes, multiple speeds, but they're going to be there. I mean, that's some nasty stuff. Anyway, Ken, good day, Muskie Pros. I'm a new muskie angler in the Chicagoland area. I've slowly been collecting a few muskie baits, but had a question about trolling. When referencing the trolling charts for a certain bait, does a slower speed mean less depth? I'm a kayak angler and run a Hobie PA-12. I can consistently kick 2-3 miles an hour, but getting up to 4 is a little bit of work. Would love your comments. Love the podcast as well. Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Ken. JD, love Ken.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thanks.
Yeah.
Huh.
So, slower speed. So, in again, musky fishing is information for musky fishing is gross generalities, right? Unless we're there in the moment, it can differ. We talked, but for somehow we've ended up with a lot of trolling questions this week, but we're getting into the fall trolling, so it makes sense. But
yeah.
What I'd say is this, is anytime you have a general parameter, which is a X amount of line, X amount of speed, achieves X amount of depth, that's something you need to check on your, like we told the other guy about trolling. But obviously, if you have those parameters, you are going to lose depth by losing speed, right? So if you need to achieve certain depths, you need to increase speed or increase length of line.
So up to a certain speed.
Right. If you can't hit 3 mile, you can hit 3, but you can't hit 4, you're hamstrung in, I need more line to hit that depth. Now, you may not have the appropriate action in conjunction with the appropriate depth. But you can achieve the depth by additional line in some capacity. Now, the other thing that can be done is you're in a kayak. You're trolling in a kayak. I would never say this. I don't like trolling anything other than an 80-pound braid, right? Anymore. I might every now and again troll 30-pound mono. I've done it. But you might be able to get away with that 55-pound braid, right? Big muskie hits you in a kayak going forward. He can probably stop you, I'm guessing. And some, you know what I'm
saying?
I'm
guessing too, right? Yeah. No kidding.
It's not like we've got a 18-foot boat with a big old motor on it hauling butt. So you might be able to sort of rob Peter to pay Paul in line diameter to achieve deeper depths. Now, again, that's not going to increase your action. So if it's a matter of depth, you can achieve it. If it's a matter of action that is derived from speed, it will be problematic. So you just got to consider that. The only other thing is this, if you're taking it like over the top, and I'll just say this, I don't know your kayak setup off the top of my head. I know it's a good kayak. I mean, they do make trolling motors for those things too.
Yeah. Well, you said something important back there, Steve, about not all lures are going to run effectively at the right. So let's say, you know, without putting out too much energy for a long period of time, 2 to 3 miles per hour is the achievable speed that craft can run at.
Mm-hmm.
You following me?
Right.
Yep.
Am I? I don't know.
That's primo for a lot of trolling baits.
Yeah.
Not so much. There's some we're very familiar with that like to be in the upper threes.
Mm-hmm.
So think about that when you base your decision on what you want to use and how much line you want to put out for correct running depth.
And in that 2 to 3 range, Livingston Lures Pounders, Joe Booker Depth Raiders, Triple Ds,
for sure.
Livingston Rachels. Slammer baits, sort of like those speeds. Like you said, that's a good point. Grandma's really happy in that too.
Grandma's, Grandma's G9s.
Grandma!
Cisco kids.
Grandma.
There's a lot of them. The list goes on and on.
My grandma. Mm-hmm. JSE has a 10-inch grandma. What? How'd you get so
nothing.
How'd you get so tall if your grandma's 10 inches? They don't make a 10-inch grandma, do they? It's 9-inch, my apologies.
9s and 13s.
Right. Do you have a 13-inch grandma or 9-inch grandma? Is she in the Guinness Book of World Records for being only 13 inches?
She's tiny.
I have a 13-inch grandma. Yes. I'm sorry. I wasted everybody's time. Brett, let's say you're raising fish, sometimes the same fish or different fish, but you're seeing a lot of them, and raise them all on Suix or Glide baits, but can't seem to trigger any of them to go. What do you do in this situation? What do you switch to? What's your tactics? What do you try? So dive and rise, glide baits, right? The old trusty, dusty Suic. Glide bait. I'm thinking Hellhounds. I'm thinking Phantoms. They're looking. They ain't eating.
Yep.
So on those two presentations, what we have presented them with is up and down, side to side, right? If we're working our Hellhound through our glide baits, bam, 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 pause. Bam, 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 pause, right? Or we're working our Suic, up and down, you know, all this stuff. There's this hang, there's this rise. You might need more action. You might need let's say you're throwing 10-inch, freaking 10-inch Suics or 9-inch Suics and moving fish, you might need to go to a big 9-inch grandma. I'm sorry. You might need to go to a crank. You might need that 8-inch slammer. You might need more action.
Mm-hmm.
More speed.
More speed, more. Yeah. I'm just thinking that actually one person should try a bucktail.
Yeah.
Get that vibration going a little bit more steady speed, man. It's just not triggering them, but it's just like now, they just need, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you might be focused on, oh, I'm working on my dive and rise game, and they're moving, right? And again, the flip side of this coin is I talked to Herbeck, right? They had a day where they went out, unweighted Titan, Eagle Lake. They moved 10. Nothing else would move them. They would move on that thing, but they weren't eating.
Okay, well, that's different in my mind. Go on. Yeah.
You need to assess that situation and go, okay, I know Dusty Larry's over here. Right? Here's Dusty Larry's, 44 inches of pure pain, sitting over this weed bed. And I've moved him on a Hellhound, and I moved him on a Suic, and he won't eat. But I moved him twice. You come back through with blades. You come back through with a crank. You come back through with rubber, right? And he still won't eat. But you throw a Suic back out there and he comes back up. You go, it's a tough call. And that's a lot of times guys will run into this. They'll make the right move of, all right, I went from dive and rise to maybe a small crank and I'm ripping it, like ripping a crane bait. I mean, what's the freaking difference in dive and rise and ripping minnow bait? It's not too terribly much, right? I mean, you rip a freaking slammer down hard. It's going down, it comes up. It goes down, it comes up, you know?
And they're covering the same water depth column, too.
Yeah.
So, same turf, yeah.
There might be a fish that they're just dialed in on looking at, you know, a frickin'. They want a high impact Suic and frickin'. What's that purple lace? What's that one, Jay? You know the Suic, every Suic model known to man.
Oh, It's either F10 or F3.
Right. So they're
don't quote me on it.
They're dialed in on F3, purple lace, 9-inch suits. They'll move on them. They won't eat them. Yeah. Right? That is a great time to go get barbecue. I'm teasing. I've seen it. We've all seen it. We'll all be there. We'll all be there again. You've got to just keep going through the box until one of them eats. Now, with the other thing, the flip side of that, the other possibility is timing. Right? Majors, minors, sun up, sundown. Right? All the possibilities of when they might actively be feeding. You move him, don't keep pounding on him. You move him twice, that should be enough. Come back when it's better. With that being said, all day long you're going, I just moved Dusty Larry. Giant. What am I going to do? You're thinking in your head all day long, what do you come back on this fish with?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, you just sort of throw it out there and hope for the best. I'm going to probably come back through with something similar. But you just sort of throwing the dice there. There's no like hardcore answer in that situation. But we've talked about it before. If dive and rise isn't working, my next move is usually cranks. Right. And so I might go from a Suic to a slammer or a freaking Titan, you know, Titan to a crane. Doesn't really matter, but
yeah.
That might be the case there. I don't know. Jay, what are you thinking? I'm just sort of riffing here.
In Herbeck's situation where they're running specifically on that one where they had 10 fish up and it's just like that's the only response they could get because there's three, four guys in the boat.
Nothing else
would
happen.
And they're all throwing different stuff. Nothing else would work.
And there's one guy moving the hell out of them.
Yeah, I like that. You know, a real stop and go retrieve because you're still – evoking the same kind of presentation in terms of stop and go.
Mm-hmm.
Super erratic. You know, something's injured and it's, you know, dying. Something's dying in the water, not something's fleeing in the water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems like there's two types of bait presentations, dying or fleeing, you know?
Right.
So
that's a good point.
Yeah.
Dying from fleas.
Yep.
No, I mean, good point. You know, a tube is dying.
Mm-hmm. A topwater is fleeing.
A bulldog is dying.
Yeah.
No, you're supposed to come back with another bait, Jay.
No, that's all I got.
Jay's from the Northwoods. He doesn't know anything about anything other than topwaters.
Jeez. Yeah, right. Oh, no, that's not true.
Jay put the people of Gooch's Tallywhacker through college. The whole family.
Yep.
Buys them all. That's it. Just trolling 14 tallywhackers at a time. That's a bait you don't think about very often anymore, is it?
Those things work. That's my first topwater fish I ever caught.
Gooch?
Was a Gooch's Tallywhacker.
Got a big one on my Gooch.
Duck, 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 duck. Kabloosh. Fun times, man.
Dude,
those
why didn't
fun.
They use... You just came up with their new catchphrase, Jay. Kabloosh on the goosh.
How do you spell kabloosh? Exactly. If you could spell it, it would be effective.
I don't know.
Neither do I.
Sean from Jersey.
Sean.
Shane. Recently got into the Buck Terry... Buck Terry. God, I'm retarded. Recently got into Buck Perry's teachings. Single most important fishing event in my life. I am a river fisherman most of my life and just bought a jet boat 2 years ago for Delaware River muskies. Getting into lake fishing now and have dove headfirst into structure fishing. What an aha moment. After going through the teaching and then looking at a contour map, it's like you just learned a new language. With that being said, I want to say thank you for your structure fishing masterclass. You know, it's a must. Okay, he's getting gushy, and I appreciate that. And,
I'm tearing up. No, that's very cool. It's cool to hear.
And really we appreciate that. That's awesome, Sean. You know, and we've got some other basic structure fishing questions this week. And we sort of touched on with like the guy that's looking at that one lake and we're looking up spots. It is. It genuinely is a different approach entirely. Most guys, we've said it before, most guys are going to launch the boat. They're going, where's the weeds? Let's throw at them. Right? Hey, Gordo. They throw at the weeds. They move on with their life. But there's more going on because once you realize that cover, timber, rocks, wood, vegetation is not generally that important. It may exist, but it needs to be in conjunction with structure. We've said that before. It is. I don't believe that that's an opinion. I believe it to be a fact. I believe it to be a fact. Right? You have to have both. So you can have cover with poor structure that will not produce, but you can have structure with no cover that will produce. Right? Bad cover is worthless. Good structure is good year round. And, you know, something I dealt with on Eagle Lake this year, lack of weeds.
Oh, I bet. With the high water.
They sure. had the year before they had a drought and then they had a flood. There are spots there that should have been so thick with tobacco cabbage that R.J. Reynolds came through and harvested it to roll it up.
Right? There's nothing there. Yeah, nothing. What a landscape change, huh? Wow.
Now, with that being said, the structural elements in and around those zones were still highly productive. The fish might not go up on the flats where this vegetation once was or will be again, but that little point, that little break, that little irregularity in a contour, they were there. That's what saved that trip, right? Not a lot of weed fishing, a lot of structure fishing where you go, everybody else is, I'm hearing back, where's no weeds? Where's the weeds? We're looking for the weeds. There's dominant, publicly known, worldwide known weed beds up there that were 1/16th of what they typically had been. Right? And you go, okay, I've played this game before. What do I look for? Right? Is in the grand question is it cover? Is it structure? It's neither. It's a conjunction. Right? So if cover is lacking, if cover is lacking, structure is dominant. If structure is lacking, cover is useless. I don't know. What do you think, Jay?
Well, I wanted to ask you before I forget.
Do you have covers?
Absolutely.
Are they Miami Vice or Knight Rider?
I don't know. Hey, what is change of subject?
Yes.
What does Herbeck think about his fall forecast for Eagle with the water being 4 feet high? What he's seen in a short period of time, what's he thinking this fall? Is it going to produce just like off the charts, or he's like, it's going to be bit different tactically?
What a freaking
year. He doesn't have a firm idea. Okay.
We've BS'd about it. What a weird year.
Yeah. Right.
Nobody can say this is, I mean, I've heard great stuff out of Minnesota, but in general, everybody's like, oh, this is crazy. Yeah. I've never seen Eagle Lake. Like the dam was spraying like a water cannon. So it was bizarre. It was just different in every regard.
Okay.
You know, it is what it is. I mean, late ice. I know the fishing in the Northwoods is always going to be solid, right? There's too many bodies of water and too many lakes and too many people fishing to not produce, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we talked about it. It was a different year entirely, right? It's a different year across the board. But I think that late ice, I know Al Frost swears by it. It just weirds things out. It just throws everything off in some regard. How it does it, I don't know. I got no answers for you. I'm not even going to attempt to come up with some freaking answer for that. Eagle's weird. It's always tough, not tough, but it's always different. And then you throw a monkey wrench in the or whatever into this thing, and you go, You know, a lot of this shallow or darker water is not as productive as the open water, and yada yada yada. I would say, there's got to be a strong September bite all through the northern zone. Wisconsin, Minnesota, Canada's got to be on fire. There's no way it can't be. Anyway, Jay, you've got... Are you going to be just problematic all week long again?
No, no.
Busy.
Pretty excited.
You busy beaver.
The video coming out is absolutely fantastic this week. It's that Wisconsin episode that we haven't had time to air yet with a really nice fish. And it's a soft plastics overview. I got some great footage of some obscure things and some common soft plastics. And it's just like... It's really cool when they roll right in your face. It's you could tell how they wiggle. You can tell how they flow. You can tell what they do on the drop and kind of like their dive curve and all that. You mm-hmm. almost get an idea of that just in, you know, a couple seconds with the bait running from in front of you underwater. And then you guys tied it together so well in terms of retrieve types and when to apply it. And Josh is, you remember that thing we shot after the fact, you know, that recap section with Josh
with the Krieger.
And he had that. Yeah. And Krieger goes, hey, you know, what about this? And it's like, let's do that too. That was, he did a great tip there. That was just a little added thing on the end. Cool. It's, I really like it. That's a neat episode. I'm looking forward to that one. So plus it's a lake around here and, you know, you don't have too many Wisconsin ones left, you know. I think there's three or four from this season. And
way to sell it, Jay. It was a lake around here.
I can't say where, but it was in the Vilas Oneida County area when you were up on your trip. Mm-hmm. And
with the Krieger.
Josh Krieger, Eagle River Guide Extraordinaire. That's him.
Hard fish and soft plastics.
Yeah, he's good, man. He's a good stick.
Oh yeah, I love Josh. He's
he's a cool guy too.
He's my friend. Anyway, Jay Bird, say goodnight.
Night, guys.
Hold on. I said 5 minutes. It's been like 50. I literally just forgot. Should we give away something this week for people that have listened the entire time? Two baits, what do you say? Out of the prize, out of the prize room.
What's the criteria? How are they going to get involved?
Ooh, I don't know. I'm thinking.
Can't comment on a video.
No.
Can't.
We've done all that.
Don't want to hide something on the website right now. We don't.
Just freaking listen. If you've listened this long and we're retarded and stupid, just freaking send Jay an email at the Muskie Shop.
How about send your favorite Muskie picture this season to us and with your name,
and they'll post it on the site or whatever.
Yeah,
or the,
and we'll post social. It. Yeah, that's
win a prize pack. I love it, Jay. We got talking about that and I forgot. Anyway. For real this time. Jay Bird, say goodnight. Say it.
Are we gonna give it away?
Yeah. Email a musky picture to the Muskie Shop. Say goodnight. I'm sick of this. I wanna stop.
Night, guys.
Later.